Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined today by Sam Vecenie, who is maybe the nicest person I have met in this industry. Legitimately a really, really good dude who brings even better information. Sam, how you doing?
Oh, I appreciate that. I try and be very nice to people. I just think that, like, if you treat people well, they will treat you well. So I really appreciate that introduction. But thanks, man. I'm happy to come on.
Anytime, man. You're always welcome here, especially this time of year. It's been tough for me. I've been trying to get myself immersed in draft stuff. I just in general am not very good at it anyway, so I let the experts kind of do their thing. But this year in particular, it's been kind of interesting because it's just hard for me to see the Lakers using their draft picks. So I think that's kind of where we're going to start.
Yeah.
What have you been hearing? What are the chances you think the Lakers actually select somebody and keep that player on their team come June 20th?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I've heard so many different iterations of possibilities for the Lakers. Like, legit, I've been on the phone now for two straight days, and the thing that I ask everyone is, what do the Lakers do? Because the Lakers hold the keys in many ways to what's going to happen on draft night. The top three, barring a trade up from Atlanta, barring, some sort of weird scenario that we're not really foreseeing at this stage, the top three seems pretty set. The fourth pick, though, is where things really get kicked off, because that's where the uncertainty in terms of player starts. That's where the uncertainty in terms of what the Lakers want to do starts. So it's just a very interesting situation to try and dive into. And I've gotten so many different things now that, like, I don't feel comfortable really saying, like, publicly what they're going to do. I can give you, like, an inference on, like, what my reading is, but, like, it's not, like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, hey, this is what they're going to do. This is, like, a report. I mean, like, I've heard that they're very strongly involved in, looking at moving the pick. They certainly want to try and be involved in Anthony Davis discussions. And, where they go after that is a question at this stage, I think. If I had to ballpark it, 33% they trade it, maybe something like that. I don't know, though. Like,
which is pretty high for a top five pick,
right? Like, I don't have a great feel for what they're gonna do, to be honest. I don't think anyone has a great feel for what they're gonna do, and, like, honestly, in large part, I think it's because, like, of the uncertainty in the Lakers front office, right? From what I know, they haven't had even many players in for workouts so far. They haven't had it's just been like they haven't really, like, there are some players that, like, some agents that I've heard from where the Lakers haven't even reached out to them about, like, certain players that I'm like, you should probably at least, like, do due diligence on these guys. But, like, and I don't mean that as, like, the Lakers are screwing up or anything like that. It's just, like, their process this year seems to be very different. And it's interesting to me.
That's
that
what
this
happens
is,
when Kurt Rambis runs
we're in a place. it's Kurt. It's, that's the other thing, too. Like, it's very unclear from people around the league who exactly is going to be making this pick, because Rob, like, hasn't seen a lot of these guys. Like, Rob was at the Bill Duffy workout that I saw. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, like, I know for sure that he has, like, a super high level of scouting knowledge about all of these players either. So, how involved will guys like Joey Buss and Brian West be? How involved is Kurt Rambis? How involved is Linda Rambis, apparently, by reports? I don't know these things. Yeah. And the thing is that, like, a lot of people around the NBA don't know these things either. So it's just a very convoluted situation that I think we're all trying to figure out right now. Like, the Lakers and the Wizards are the two teams that I struggle with the most. The Wizards, obviously, because they haven't hired a basketball executive.
The two teams devoid of leadership.
the Lakers, like, we just don't know what's going to happen. Because, like, part of the way that, I can take you behind the veil a little bit. Part of the way that I do mock drafts and stuff is, like, I have a, I don't want to say, like, a database, but, like, I know like what each executive tends to value, mm-hmm. right? Or at least like based off of past decisions. Like that's what I try and I like, it's almost like playing poker. You try and play the man as much as you play the cards, right?
Yeah.
So like there's that aspect of it, but with the Lakers, I don't really have the ability to play the man because there are six different people sitting at the table who are all holding the same set of cards. And, you know, which one do you read? Who's going to make the final decision on whether or not to call the better fold, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's an interesting dynamic. And it's funny because, you know, on one hand you say, oh, cool, the Lakers are playing their cards close to their vests, but it's probably more likely they're just kind of bickering with so many cooks in the kitchen. I want to really quickly just for sakes of shits and giggles here. Zion Williamson is obviously far and away the best talent in this draft, right? And then it's you know, the John Morants, and then it's RJ Barrett. And then, you know, there seems to be another tier here. But in just in terms of talent here, we'll go into specific names here in a bit, but just in terms of talent and in terms of the tiers, is the gap that huge between the second tier and the third tier?
For me, I'm trying to figure out a way I can like not get myself in trouble. I would say that I am higher on RJ Barrett than the industry as a whole mm-hmm. seems to be. I think he's, you know, I probably would still take Ja at number two, but I think that RJ is like right in the mix at number yeah. two. So I think that because of that, I do think that there is something of a slight gap mm-hmm. between number three and number four in terms of like, I do think that that is a very real tier break. Whereas some people, you know, have Jarrett Culver is a very similar prospect to RJ Barrett. Some people really like Darius Garland's upside and would put him in that tier. I personally have it as a clean break mm-hmm. of a tier. Some people don't necessarily have that around the league. That is even, mm-hmm. You can look on the internet as well. Some people, you know, it's become popular to hate on RJ Barrett. So, like this is not necessarily news, I don't think. But having said that, at number four, there are options here that really stand out that I think can be extremely high level players. First and foremost, I think Darius Garland's upside is extremely high. Mm-hmm. It is extremely high. His live dribble game and ability to pull up and knock down shots is absolutely unbelievable. Now, you know, it's become popular to kind of compare him to Kyrie Irving, I think, because Kyrie had the shortened season at Duke. He had a similar live dribble game, similar pull up ability, similar scoring ability. The big difference between Darius and Kyrie is that even at young ages, Kyrie had that like unique ability to finish around the basket.
Yeah, he's always been
a high
there.
Level. Uh-huh. Yeah, and Darius doesn't really have that. Darius actually really struggles with his left hand around the basket. His touch around the basket, I think, isn't all that great. His ability to absorb contact, I think, isn't necessarily great either. As a passer, I think that, you know, I probably would take what Kyrie was at a younger age than what Darius is now. But, you know, you're kind of picking straws out of a hat there, right? Like it's, you know, six of one, half dozen of another. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Defensively similar to Kyrie in that they're not going to be high level defenders. But so like there, I get why some people have done that, but I think that there are very distinct differences in their game that make Darius like a guy that is at number four, whereas Kyrie was considered the consensus number one guy in that class. Having said that, like you don't have to be Kyrie Irving to be a like all-star NBA player. Mm-hmm. Like Kyrie is a top 10 guy in the league offensively, especially Darius, I think has the ceiling and potential to get to a level where he's like a top 20 player in the NBA offensively. He is genuinely that good with his live dribble game and with his ability to get past defenders with change of pace and change of speed, change of direction as well. Change of pace and change of speed are the same thing. It's been a long week already.
Not if you ask Pelinka. I think he had some kind of different... It's like pace and drive and something like that. He had a weird difference there. It was wild. He's a weird dude.
Honestly, you know, if you really wanted to split hairs with it, I could probably get into the weeds with him and like talk about that at a high level. But, you know, for a general audience, I don't know that it's worth doing that.
We could probably move on.
But he's really good. He has a terrific pull up game. He can pull up from any angle, from anywhere within like 28 feet already. His pull up game is exceptional to the point where it really just keeps defenders off balance.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch those highlights just because the Lakers haven't had a player like that in quite some time. We're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, I wanted to spend that first segment just kind of contextualizing the situation that the Lakers are going into with this draft. And then when we come back, we'll get into the weeds and we'll get into the specifics of the different directions that they might be able to go in. So hang tight. We'll come right back here in a bit. All right, so it doesn't appear like Zion is going to fall down to the Lakers here. I would probably venture a pretty safe prediction. Magic Johnson has probably just tweeted out that the Lakers don't have a chance at Zion Williamson. And then, like you said, it's kind of 2-3 is pretty set there, even if the order might swap or whatever. And then we got into...
I would throw out that I think there's like a 10% chance that RJ Barrett falls to 4.
That's
like
interesting.
It's 5%,
the Knicks.
Maybe, yeah. like seriously, the Knicks are as unpredictable as the Lakers in many ways.
Yeah.
They're certainly involved in trade discussions. So, like, I don't think that it is impossible that RJ Barrett falls to 4. I just like want to say that I don't think it happens, but like, it's not impossible right now.
Cool. Do you think who it kind of sort of seems like there are three names that are most tied to the Lakers as of right now? These things tend to change or whatever. I still think that Davis gets traded before the draft so that New Orleans can draft whoever they wind up, you know, they can either, if they send him to New York, then they get to use that third pick for somebody they want. Or if they send him to here, they get to use that fourth pick on whoever they want. But if the Lakers use their pick, the three names I've seen linked to the Lakers the most in mocks has been DeAndre Hunter, has been Jarrett Culver, and then we just talked about Darius Garland. Of those three players, who do you think makes the most sense for the Lakers right now, even if, you know, the Lakers roster is in all kinds of flux?
So, yeah, I think that it's very difficult to make the like full on statement which one fits best, if only because we don't know what the roster is going to look like.
Yep. Perfect.
Having said that, like, I'm sure that the Lakers have some sort of inclination. Part of the problem this year is that the draft is 10 days before free agency. Mm-hmm. And that's a longer time than what we're like used to. And I think that a lot of NBA executives feel like a lot can change in those 10 days.
Yeah.
Like in regard to free agency, like you can feel like Jimmy Butler is coming on draft day. And then on July 1st, he ends up signing a max extension with the Sixers, you know? So yeah. Like there is a lot to parse through, in my opinion. Having said that, if the Lakers roster, let's say if they are able to bring in, I'm trying to think of how to, like, phrase this, like if they think they're going to get a point guard, like if they think they're getting Kyrie or Kemba Walker, and I don't think they're getting Kyrie, but like, let's say that it's Kemba. If they think they are getting Kemba, they should probably not take Darius Garland because you don't want to play Darius Garland and Kemba Walker together.
Right.
If they think they're getting Jimmy Butler, I think you could pretty reasonably take Darius Garland at 4. If they think that they're getting, you know, X, Y, or Z, Tobias Harris or something like that, then you might not want to take DeAndre Hunter because DeAndre and Tobias are both kind of lower usage guys and not the kind of players that you necessarily want to have to like fit around LeBron. Right. So a lot of what the Lakers should do has to do with the intel that they currently have on free agency. The thing about all of it is, though, for me and why I would probably take this guy, despite the fact that I have DeAndre Hunter personally higher on my board, I would probably take Jarrett Culver because I think he's the most malleable piece to doing what the Lakers want. Basically, he fits basically in any situation with free agency. Like, you can play him with Jimmy Butler, you can play him with any of the point guards, you can play him next to Tobias Harris because he can handle the ball a little bit. You can play him next to Chris Middleton or something like that, like if for whatever reason they end up with him. So I think that there's that aspect of it. I think that Jarrett Culver's trade value is probably a little bit higher around the league than what DeAndre Hunter's trade value is. You know, every front office is going to think differently of this, but at least in regard to the people that I've spoken with, it does seem to me like Jarrett is more consistently mentioned as a top five guy, whereas DeAndre is more hit or miss, despite the fact that I personally really believe in DeAndre. So I would probably take Culver if I was the Lakers, but again, I think that a lot of it depends on what they think they're getting coming up in free agency.
Yeah, it's so tough to. Which order do you prefer? Would you prefer like draft after free agency or vice versa? The way it is.
I would prefer it the way it is from a personal standpoint because like I'm getting married in August and I like having the like month and a half off basically.
Yeah.
Thank you. Otherwise I don't know when I would get married. Like if we waited for July 28th or something to do the draft, then we'd have summer league in like what? Mid August.
Yeah.
And then like, I don't know like what my life would look like then. Like my fiance would probably file a preemptive divorce, but at the same token, like from a league perspective and from the perspective of just like team building, I would rather have free agency done. I think it makes a lot more sense to do free agency than draft.
Yeah. I tend to agree too, all around. Honestly, because yeah, the year would get a lot longer if we had to take care of all of free agency before the draft. And then it's also tough because like, how do you then handle cap holds and stuff? You know, do you hold that cap hold as the way that they would now? And it's just, it gets kind of convoluted. But yeah, just in terms of sanity for the team's sake, I could see them wanting to sign bigger names to these bigger contracts before they have to then use draft capital on some of these guys. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we've already talked about guys who make sense for the Lakers here. There's a couple players, though, I think that kind of make me nervous, if not outright terrify me. So we're going to come back and talk a little bit about that. All right, so the reason why this guy terrifies me, and this is going to sound probably overly critical of him, but you know, the Andrew Wiggins and Cam Reddish comparison is just too on point. And then for a front office that is so inexperienced as the Lakers front office is, I could see Reddish going in and just absolutely crushing an individual workout and convincing them that, you know, E.G. on ask, that he's the guy that is going to be their next Kobe or whatever. Am I freaking out for no reason there, or is that something that could actually take place here?
Well, here's the good news for you. Cam Reddish is now injured and will be unable to work out.
Well,
so if you don't want Cam Reddish, then you know, you're probably in pretty good shape because, you know, I'm sure that they were at his pro day and they probably saw the pro day where he, so Reddish's pro day was interesting. I've gotten very mixed things. Like, I guess he was on the court for like 10 to 15 minutes and, you know, looked good in those 10 to 15 minutes as one with his physical tools, who is 6'8", 7'1". You put him in open space and in the open floor, he looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt and had to shut it down. I think that he had like, I think he just might've like pulled something in his leg was the thought. And I guess that a lot of executives and just like people around the league kind of felt like it wasn't, like it wasn't all that it was kind of cracked up to be at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Cam's hard. You have to really feel like you have the kind of developmental staff who can get the absolute most out of players,
which is not the Lakers.
And not the Lakers to this point, certainly. You know, it's like teams are around the league trying to figure out about like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. Like, hey, if like, are these guys distressed assets right now that we can acquire for less because we think that the Lakers development staff hasn't been good enough. So yeah. Like, you just look at the, you know, production of D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle in the last year.
Oh, we've been paying attention.
I'm sure you have. Like, I think that there is real reason to really believe that that is possible. So basically, if I was the Lakers, I would not touch Cam Reddish. If I was the Hawks or someone like that, where I felt like pretty good about the way that, you know, I can develop players, I would really strongly consider Cam Reddish. And I think that they will really strongly consider Cam Reddish at number 8. But at the end of the day, like it's a tough, it's kind of tough all over the board for the Lakers right now, because I don't know. I just don't know what their front office is thinking.
The last hypothetical here that we can really go through, and it's one that I just don't think makes very much sense for them right now. Given what they're trying to do, they're in win now mode. And so trading back and getting an extra draft asset, unless you're trying to acquire, you know, say a better, you know, a better player, that another team is willing to unload as well as, you know, maybe a bad contract or whatever, if they completely, like it, huh?
Well, I think that it'd be like, you know, if the Lakers come to find that the Wizards would rather have 8 and 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that Atlanta would give up 8 and 10 for number 4, but if they come to find that like another team out there wants, or like if the Celtics were willing to deal 14, 20, and 22 for number 4, and the Lakers come to find out the Wizards would rather have 14, 20, and 22 in this draft than just number 4. For Bradley Beal or something like that, like, sure, do that. But I don't think that they're looking to like move down to take multiple players. I think that they're looking to move down though as a potential like vehicle for trade assets, basically.
Yeah, the draft darling in this scenario has been Brandon Clark. But as you and I agreed, I don't think they would trade back to take a player there.
Here's the thing. Like, yeah, go for it. I get that people are like pumped about Brandon Clark, and I love Brandon Clark. I've talked to him. Like, he's just an exceptional human. Brandon Clark is not really, like, he's useful for the Lakers insofar as like they could play a switch heavy scheme and like do all this stuff. But the Lakers have also had an exceptional amount of luck drafting centers and drafting big guys over the years. Like, we can talk about their asset management with them after they draft them, but they took Ivica Zubac, they took Thomas Bryant, they took Larry Nance. They have figured they figured out that position. I would not be very worried about that. You know what? Like, if there's one position that I feel like Joey Buss and Ryan West have figured out the game on, it's the center position. Like, I would just continue, especially with the amount that the center position tends to get used in LeBron James offenses, LeBron James led offenses. I would not be thinking like I need to expend a high level asset on a center.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely intriguing, and all of the stuff. Cause again, this isn't my forte. So I basically listen to the smart people, and the one of the players that seems to get love almost as a consensus across the smart draft people has been Brandon Clark. It's hard for me to see that making sense for where the Lakers are currently in any kind of scenario here to go that route. Anything else that you any other predictions or any other takes on anybody in the draft that we haven't mentioned before we wrap up here?
Ooh, do I just want to fire off some takes real quick?
Yeah,
giving me the avenue to fire off takes.
Rapid fire.
I don't think the Lakers. Do the Lakers have a second round pick? I don't think so. Right?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I think that they gave it to who'd they give it to? Atlanta, maybe? Does Atlanta
either
have that pick?
Atlanta or Detroit? Because they made that Bullock trade.
I think it's Atlanta. Let me look it up real quick. Okay, it's Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we're good. If I was the Lakers, I would try and move back into this draft. Like, I would, you know, if part of this is like the discussion of, are the Bucks cash rich enough to give up $5 million? Mm-hmm.
God, that's
like it.
That's a scary
acquire a second round pick.
Yeah.
If they could do that, and if they're capable of doing that, this is a draft where I think it would be useful to give up something like $5 million to acquire an asset, like mm-hmm. at number 45 or so. I think that there are a lot of guys that are interesting players
mm-hmm.
who could help them. Like, I don't think it's impossible that someone like Louis King is there. Daquan Jeffries, I think, would really help the Lakers. If Chuma Okeke is there somehow, he makes
some
a lot of sense.
Incredible names in the second round here.
There
Admiral
are, yeah.
Schofield. Like, these are just insanely great names.
Admiral Schofield would be an awesome, awesome, awesome pick for the Lakers.
Yeah.
So, Talen Horton Tucker, you know, doesn't really fit them, what they're doing now, but like, he's a good player. Carson Edwards, if he was to fall a little bit, like, I think Carson Edwards makes a lot of sense for them. So, yeah, I'm looking at just this draft. I think that they're, you know, it's kind of got shit on a little bit because it doesn't have the high end talent from like the full on lottery, but I do think that there is some talent worth trying to acquire down the road.
Definitely interesting stuff. Draft year, or this time of year, especially once the finals really wrap up, is going to be insane. Like, this whole off season with free agency, the number of guys who are available, trade candidates who aren't even being talked about quite yet, those always kind of pop up on draft night in ways that we haven't thought about. And then, oh yeah, by the way, this Anthony Davis guy, who is a 26-year-old absolute stud, is probably going to decide a lot of the ways that the league is going to go in. It's a crazy time of year. I'm going to be bugging you constantly. You made a mistake of giving me your cell phone number, so I'm going to be I'm going to be bothering you. And then, oh yeah, we're recording this on July 5th or on June 5th. July 5th, I'm flying out to Vegas. Am I going to see you out there?
I will be out in Vegas, no question. I'll be there for Summer League.
Awesome. So we're gonna spend some time at that one random dive bar watching Matt Moore tell some of the best stories I think we've ever heard.
Dude, that dive bar was terrific. Let me just say this first and foremost. Like, as someone who is a connoisseur of dive bars and like I still go to the same dive bar that I've gone to like from the moment I got out to LA.
Uh-huh.
Like 6 years ago, still go because I haven't found one better yet.
Yeah.
That was a good one in Vegas.
Yeah, we spent the night that Jen and I got married. There was a dive bar right across the street that we went to like get for the party after the reception. I love dive bars. They were great. And that one in particular was great. It felt like it was straight out of the 70s. It was incredible. So thank you very much, Sam, for coming on. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, just go to The Athletic, I would say. That's it, man. Keep me employed at The Athletic. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Check out all of Sam's work. He's, in my opinion, the best draft guy out there. While we have been recording this, I've had his mock draft up. So check that out at The Athletic. On Twitter, he is at Sam_Vecenie, VECENIE. Thanks very much, Sam. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, of course, man. Anytime.